Dust by Hugh Harper. Brown shoes. Brown shoes. Everything is brown here. I scampered about looking for the required brown faux suede shoes I was supposed to wear. I detested them. They were clean and nearly indestructible, and they were stain and stench resistant. I had to wear them every single damn day. No shine, no laces, no trendy tread, no choice in the matter whatsoever. "They aren't brown," my roommate stated. "They're beige." "Brown, beige, it's the same f***ing thing." "Beige came from brown, or brown from beige. You know what else is the same color?" "Colors?" "Shit. Shit is the same color as these shoes, this apartment. This whole city smells like the beige I just flushed. It sucks the very firmament from the skies with its filth. Children no longer play outside for fear of becoming beige. It's even become a popular insult, like, "This fish sandwich tastes like beige." Or, "Here's one for the ladies. Does this dress make me look beige?" "It sucks!" Amanda stood up quickly and walked over and kissed me on the forehead. She held my face for what seemed like an uncomfortable forever. "And I'm leaving." It was true. I had secretly packed my scrap of the necessities. Everything else was, in honesty, just trash. And it was an ironic time to leave, too, considering my memberships to both the health club and my smartphone were about to expire if I didn't take action. And I didn't take action. Instead, I packed all I needed in an old army rucksack. It wasn't brown. It was worse. Amanda removed her hands from my face and backed against the hallway mirror. "Leaving? Why?" "There is not a single thing that I like about this place. Haven't you heard me?" "Yes." She turned and walked toward the kitchen cabinet for a wine glass and poured the remainder of a piss beige wine.
I thought you were just ranting. Just what? Are you daft?
I've been going on and on about how much this city is just the worst. 'Cause it is. Crime is a sidebar, jobs are a joke, and don't even get me started on the public urinals.
What about us?
Us? She gulped down the wine like it was a fat shot of cheap scotch, and I smiled briefly as she caught that little bit of alcoholic heat. We have a platonic relationship, you and I. You and I haven't even so much as shaken hands in 2 years, and haven't slept together since we moved in. There's no ring or umbilical cord that binds us. I'm gone.
What about the lease?
It's up in a month. Keep the deposit. Keep my shit. Sell it. I don't care.
That means I'll have to move out.
Yeah, I guess so. The landlord already knows that I'm leaving. She looked at me with her sad and puzzled eyes. Took pictures. We're good. Phil's a great guy. You should talk to him. That much was true. As far as landlords are concerned, Phil was tops. Listen, I don't side well with communists, okay? You're dedicated to this city, dedicated to some kind of massive transformation into the delicate cycle of letting a bloated system feed the masses cookies that taste like shit. When the good ones are out there, I pointed west. A thick haze blocked the potential view of a green expanse never explored by city dwellers. I'd been there. So long ago, as though in a dream. And maybe it was more legend than history. Maybe. And that wasn't the point. I didn't belong here. And that much was true. And the beige haze blocking my view of out there was pissing me off.
I
stopped her. Amanda had, when we first met, this twinkle of wildness in her green eyes, long, wavy auburn hair, a giggle, and a laissez-faire attitude. She was, in fact, quite beautiful. But she changed within the year. Everything was heavy. She was lost in the city. I really felt bad for her.
I don't care what you think.
She reached into the cabinet, grabbed a tiny bottle of vodka that I'd held onto for 5 years after a mutual acquaintance of ours had gotten married and divorced. In truth, I was looking forward to drinking it. Nice bottle. It came with an obligatory purchase of a microwave oven and a disposable marriage certificate. She got the oven. He received the divorce papers. The funny thing was that I couldn't remember their names.
"Well, I guess you have it all figured out," she sniffed.
She struggled to open the bottle and handed it to me. I opened it and handed it back to her. Immediately, her drinking hand flew to her mouth to take it all in. Ooh, that burn going down.
"You're just out the door?"
"Yep." I picked up my bag and I walked down the hall. With a light bounce in my step, Phil was waiting for me in the hall.
"You really leaving, kid?"
"Yeah, Phil." I shook his hand despite the fact that handshaking had become outlawed. He didn't think too much of it himself.
"See you around,"
he smiled. "No, Phil. I'm gone," and I handed him the key.
"You know,"
he yelled at me with a lightness to his voice, and maybe a tinge of jealousy,
"they never come back."
I waved without looking back at him. Fear, perhaps, of me becoming like Lot's wife as the family left Sodom and Gomorrah. There was a wave of hot light coming through the door, and the sounds of the street, the cars, the yelling, the busyness of it all grew as I threw the door open for the last time. I imagined Phil staring as the door closed, the hallway colder and darker and more finite. And the economy had crumbled. After years of being stuck in tenement ghettos, an entire city of middle-class citizenry grew into a disgruntled mob. They all removed the locks from their padded rooms, but each was so driven by fear of the outside world, they stayed in their holes, intravenously sucking in nature and pleasant lies. They consumed self-indulgences with no regard for truth, allowing their senses to be tickled by lofty ancient philosophies in the pale of the electric blue light. Storefronts dusted and darkened in webs of a past decadence. Windows turned merely square-shaped portraits framed by transparent fangs of glass. Empty shops, when once emboldened dreams, died in grotesque heat and acrid black death. Eyes peeked through blinds and metal curtains. Curious blank stares. Judgmental, nightmarish as eyes of a peeping Tom's eyes. Watching. Breathing. Steaming in the remaining warmth of humanity in cheaply constructed concrete cages, as miserable as they were told they should be. Where if they weren't willing to depart from, deserve to rot in.
"Was it really like that, Dad?"
"Oh, yes. And much worse." Shit, I'm talking to myself again. I definitely need to get out of here. I made the decision not to pack my bag heavily. I wanted to make for the border without the weight and that pinching sensation that carrying a pack can bring. I only wanted the essentials, and I held my traveling expenses close to my belly and an oversized novelty knife hidden at my left hip. The city left me no other recourse than to protect what little I had, to be a little tougher than the average addict and 10-year-old gang member. Overall, I held my own. Gun whipped, an attempted mugging, it left a molar missing, and two complete sets of fist knuckles bloodied. But I wasn't about to let some addict take my case of beer. The city had taken enough, and no more. I am nobody's bitch. Washington Square was so idyllic. A beautiful introduction to the Big Apple. I remember actors Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan stopping under its magnificent arches after a long trip from Chicago, to never become friends until later in the film. And now, Washington Square, or whatever its name has become, stood as a testament to meaningless protests and needled homelessness. The facades of its beautiful fountain and archway covered in paint and chip. I glanced up into the highest point of the arch.
I could swear I spotted a piece of chewing gum in pink and completely unscrapable.